Welcome, Hog fans, into the basketball podcast of Mid-America. I'm Blake Sutton from Whole Hog Sports. I'm here with Scotty Bordelon of Whole Hog Sports. We are inside Bud Walton Arena, where Mike Anderson, Daniel Gafford, Mason Jones just finished a press conference coming off of a 106-87 loss at Tennessee. It's pretty ugly, but I mean, I guess one of the positives is that Arkansas outscored Tennessee in the second half. I was kind of surprised to see that.
Yeah, that's one of the positives Mike pointed to.
Yeah.
I think there's a story on our site that said Mike was pointing to positives, and I think you have to. You can't dwell on the negatives so much because the guys know what the negatives are.
Right.
They know what the negatives are. Like, they have to stress the negatives in practice too, but at the same time, you want to still point out to the guys what they did well, and they did outscore. I'm not saying that they played well at all. I'm not saying that. They outscored Tennessee by 10 points over the last 10 minutes of the game. Tennessee still covered, though.
Yeah.
Great teams cover.
I had actually predicted that Tennessee would win by 30, and
you were looking like you were going to be like a prophet for a while.
Tennessee's just really good, and this is a young Arkansas team, and I did think it was interesting. I think now, year 8 of Mike Anderson, it's not looking like it's going to be a very good season. You have a lot of fans that have, legitimate gripes with the state of the team and where they have them right now. And I'm kind of on the fence. Like, yeah, Tennessee is a really great team, and Arkansas is young, and so you expect them to lose. But at this point in Mike's tenure, it's a little disconcerting to have games that you expect to lose.
Yeah, I understand people getting frustrated. And I mean, it's never fun. Just like, it's almost like when Arkansas gets punched in the face on the floor, it's like the fans feel it too. And they immediately feel that frustration too. But I'll go back to, like, Tennessee was by far the best team Arkansas's played this year. By far.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Tennessee is, like, Final Four good to me. I don't, like, they could go cold. I don't want to say they're national championship good yet, but like Final Four, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Elite Eight, Final Four good. That was like Tuesday. I'm not trying to make excuses for this team. Like, they played pretty poor. But that was by far the biggest crowd that Arkansas had played in front of this year.
And 19,
it was the best 000. Team that they'd played all year. Like, Colorado State, all due respect, they don't hold a candle to what Tennessee's got as far as attendance and fan support and things like that. So I bet it was a little bit of a shock to them. Like, you come out, like, I think they're down 5-4, and then Tennessee goes on like a big run.
Yeah.
And that can kind of take the wind out of your sails. And I understand how just getting punched in the face can just kind of – I mean, they got knocked on their rear ends really early and just couldn't recover. So Tennessee is – they're legit.
Yeah, and our colleague Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, I was reading his article. I think it was 6-5 Tennessee, and they went on a 14-0 run, and it was 20-5. But the most impressive thing about that was the short amount of time they did it in. They did it in less than 2.5 minutes.
It's incredible.
Went on a 14-0 run, and it was 20-5. And
they've got so many weapons.
Yeah,
it's like Admiral Schofield, I don't think, scored the whole first half, and they still hung 55. He didn't score in the first half, and they still scored 55.
Yeah.
Like, it's nuts. They got Grant Williams only scored – like, he only made 2 shots, and they scored 106.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've got weapons all around, but, yeah.
I mean, yeah, where to begin? I mean, yeah, like you said, Grant Williams, he only had 2 shots. He had 18 points. He was 14 of 14 from the free throw line. I mean, as Arkansas fans know, Hogs are not doing so well from the free throw line, so when you see a guy go 14 for 14, it's just kind of dazzling.
Right.
And you said Admiral Schofield didn't score in the second half, didn't score in the first half. In the second half, he scored 17 points.
Yeah.
And I think they had 5 players that scored at least 17 points. I mean, that's just
– it was unreal.
It's incredible.
I remember – I think it was in Tom's story, too. Mike said that he thought they did a pretty solid job on Grant Williams. I don't know.
No.
I don't know. Because, I mean, he got to the line. Like, he shot 14 free throws. You're thinking, like – if he got fouled on 2-point shots, so he fouled him 7 times. And I remember one time he got, you know, Grant Williams isn't the biggest guy in the world. Like, he's smaller in terms of height than a guy like Gabe, And Grant is he's obviously thicker and wider than Gabe is, but he manhandled Gabe.
Yeah.
And Gabe like had both of his arms around Grant's biceps, and he still got a layup to go. Like, they called the foul on the floor, but could have easily been an and one. Like, it was just, I don't know that they did a great job on him.
Yeah. Speaking of Gabe, he fouled out. Arkansas have three players that fouled out.
Yeah, forced Ethan Henderson to come in for the first time since Colorado State.
And he shot 100%.
You were down to one forward. Reggie was the only forward that you had left on the floor, and he had four fouls.
Yeah.
Then Ethan has to come in.
Yeah, and, well, you know, Ethan made the most of his minutes. He shot 100%.
He made the most of his minutes.
On the floor, yeah. He had 2 points. Isaiah Joe kind of got at it. I mean, let's try to look at the positives. It's a little gloomy and wet outside, so let's have some sunshine. What do you say? Isaiah Joe got out of his slump, 23 points, 7 of 13 from 3. That he had really struggled from 3 as of late, kind of got out of his funk.
I will say he hit 4 of his 3s with 12 minutes or less to go in the game. Mm-hmm. So he was – I think he was – yeah, so he was 4 of 5 in the last 12 minutes. So 3 of 8, the first about 30 minutes of the game. He's got to be better than that. Like he shot the ball well late when the game was out of hand, but you got to have some, like the first Arkansas's first possession of the game, he gets a wide open three in the left corner, misses, and then I think the next time down, he gets the ball kicked over to him and takes a long two and misses that. Like one of those has to go.
Yeah.
And I asked Mason today just how it changes the dynamics of Arkansas's offense when both of them are making shots, and it absolutely does. And it opens up Dan. It opens up whoever's possibly playing at the four. Like, the floor is just so much – it's spaced so much better when those two guys are knocking shots down because you have to respect both of them.
Yeah.
And if you can also get your four-man knocking shots down, then, I mean, the floor's got to be spaced. You can get terrific shots from your shooters and give Dan some space to work with. So those two have to make shots. It's crazy how much – better Arkansas is when those two guys are on their game.
Yeah, Arkansas shot better in the second half by a lot. The first half they were shooting 38%, the second half they were shooting 57%. But like you said, a lot of those were garbage buckets. But yeah, Tennessee's they're elite. I think they'll be a one seed by the time March rolls around. So, you know, like I said, I'm still kind of on the fence as far as Mike. There's a lot of fans that are getting a little restless, but on the other hand, it's a young team, and Tennessee could be the best team in the country, and it's on the road, and they have 19,000 fans in the seats. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to gauge how good or bad this team is from a game like that.
To be fair, we warned everybody that this was coming.
Yeah, you know,
like before SEC play started, like we knew that it wasn't going to be easy.
Yeah. Well, and if you listen to this podcast, we predicted with 100% certainty that Arkansas was going to lose to Tennessee. I mean,
yes, we did.
Can't really get that kind of groundbreaking analysis from other, you know, rival podcasts. And we were both right. We both predicted Arkansas would lose. But Tennessee's been blowing – they've been blowing everybody out, everybody that they play.
I saw somebody tweet the other day that Tennessee is the team that looks the best when they're playing bad teams. Like, they just beat the brakes off of everybody. They beat Georgia by, what, 45?
Yeah.
Beat them by 46, beat Missouri on the road by 24, won at Florida by double digits, which is hard to do, and then beat Arkansas by 19 when they were up by as many as, what, 31?
Yeah.
31, 32 points. So.
And their only loss is Kansas.
Mm-hmm. In overtime.
They're really good. Best team in the SEC. But up next for Arkansas, Ole Miss Rebels on the road. That's also been traditionally a tough place to play for the Razorbacks. Ole Miss is doing well this year. They're kind of a surprise in the SEC. They were, 12-2 up until a couple days ago. They lost to LSU at home. They had been on a pretty long win streak. I think I read that the LSU game was their first loss since November.
Mm-hmm.
So Arkansas is going to have its hands full once again. And Daniel Gafford in the press conference said that he had seen some tweet or something that's already sold out.
Yeah. That's a nice new arena they've got, too.
Yeah.
Not playing in the Tad Pad no more.
No more Tad Pad. That was a tough place to play
that
for
place
the Razorbacks.
Just, on TV, that place just always looked dark and, like, dingy.
Oh, yeah. I think they had those old, like, hanging lights that you used to have in gym class. Yeah, yeah.
It's just, like, you get – it's all, like that, the Tad Pad and the Hump Dump. You know, Mississippi State, like, those are the two places I feel like in the past have – like, anytime you go in there, like, there's – no energy there, and I feel like that affects both teams. Like, it's not just Mississippi State because they don't have much fan support. Like, it affects other teams coming in too because they're like, wow, this place is dead.
Yeah,
this place is really dead. I just always got bad vibes when Arkansas played in those two places. So
yeah,
good to see Ole Miss has got a nice arena now.
Yeah, nice and shiny. Well, Mason Jones talked a little bit about, you know, what they can learn going from the Tennessee game going into the Ole Miss game. I think one of his comments, if Mike were to see the comment, it might not sit too well with him. Mason Jones said, when asked about what they could learn from the Tennessee game, Mason Jones said, it's good to see what a good team looks like and we can learn from how they played. And so I think a lot of people in the media room that were looking down and typing and maybe looking at their phones when he said that, everybody kind of set up and looked.
I know
at
when I was transcribing it earlier, I was like, "Hey guys, listen to what y'all remember. Mason said this."
He does have a point. Maybe
I think
there's a better
way
to say
that's kind of the, like, he could have said it was maybe a slightly worse way of saying that Tennessee's the standard, and now we know what the standard is for, like, the best in the league.
Yeah.
I think that was a sophomore version of trying to say Tennessee's the standard. So yeah. I get where he was coming from. That quote's probably not going to come off great, but I mean, I think we understand what he meant.
Yeah. And he's right. I think they can learn a lot from that Tennessee game, just to kind of see how an elite team, you know, what they do to win, mm-hmm. to actually play against them. Maybe they can learn something from it. I think another thing that we learned is that, well, I don't know if we learned this. I'm predicting it. I don't think Adriel Bailey's going to start against Ole Miss. I think
Mike mentioned that he mentioned today that he might come off the bench, and that was after a few questions about Adriel. And I had one to the players, and I did some research today, and because Adriel's fall off has been just so evident and so apparent, since Arkansas played at Colorado State. Adriel on 2-point field goals is 13 of 49 in 9 games since.
That's baffling.
If you include a missed 3 against Texas State, he's shooting 26% in those 9 games. No, before Colorado State, he was shooting 28 out of 40 in 7 games. I don't know what that percentage is. I'm not great at math. But that's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's really good. I mean, you're almost pushing 75% from the floor, so I mean, you're 67-68% at that point. And his offense that Arkansas got early in the year was so valuable. And, you know, he struggled again in games against, like, Indiana. I remember that was, he had 2 pretty good games against Texas and UC Davis. And I think he scored 20 plus points. Mm-hmm. In one of the games early in the year, but he struggled against Indiana, maybe some of the size and length that they had. But he kept playing really well and kept, like, those bunnies that he's missing now right at the rim.
Yeah.
He's, like, got the yips now. Like, I think we talked about it last week too. He's got the yips big time.
It's got to be a mental thing with him.
Yeah.
You know?
I think so.
He's healthy.
In SEC play, he's 10 of 31 from the floor.
Wow.
And
a lot of those are high percentage shots.
Yeah.
It's not like he's shooting a bunch of threes.
Yeah, and I went back and I shot chart every game. He's 3 of 11 outside the lane, which makes him 7 of 20 in the paint. You can't have you can't have a 4 guy playing 20 minutes a game if he's shooting 35% from that close in. He's a junior.
Yeah.
He's a junior, and he's your most experienced player as far as, like, playing time goes, arguably, beside Dan, but you can't. How do you, like, that was one of the questions we got on the board today. I'm going to just go ahead and bring up. One of the questions was, how do you justify him playing more minutes than Reggie at this point?
I don't think you can.
I don't know that you can either. And Reggie's played his 2 best games of the year. the last two games, since he only played 5 minutes and didn't score against Florida last week. I think he's averaging 11.5 points, 5.5 rebounds last two games, and he looked really good against LSU. And one of the things I remember after the LSU game, when Reggie had a pretty solid game, I think he scored 12. Dan was telling him that, hey, they're sagging off of you and they're not respecting your shot. You're quick enough to get to the rim, and he did that several times. Like, he drove right by Naz Reid one time, and Naz Reid's pretty good on his feet. He's a big guy, can block shots, and Reggie went right by him, scored on him. So I think, I kind of joked in the media room earlier. Mike's finally said that, and I think he's known this, but he finally said that Reggie's a good compliment to Dan. And so we're probably going to see, I would think we're probably going to see that very soon.
Well, I feel like you and I,
together more.
I think the first podcast that we did this year, when we were talking about, when we were previewing the Texas game, we talked about how you're probably going to see Reggie Cheney and Daniel Gafford together on the floor. And, you know, I feel kind of bad for Adrio, because, yeah, it's his junior year, and he was doing so well at the beginning of the season, and it's just not there anymore. I mean, at some point, you just got to say, sorry, man, like, we can't keep putting you out there for 25 minutes a game if you can't make a layup. And that's probably why he was still starting this late. I think maybe it's an emotional thing for Mike, you know, that he doesn't want to hurt his feelings.
He's kind of always favored, like, more veteran guys to experience. But at some point, you kind of have to put experience aside if it's not giving you the things that experience players often bring.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe inject some youth, and, like, Reggie's taller, better rebounder, better shot blocker, I think. I mean, he's still very raw, but yeah, overall better player for sure. Yeah. And maybe, Mike said, maybe you bring Adrio off the bench, so now you've got Gabe and Adrio coming off your bench as your backup bigs. I don't know about that either. So maybe something could shift in the backcourt too with the guards. Who knows?
Yeah, and I know it's all water under the bridge at this point, but I think a guy that they're really missing right now is a guy like Darius Hall.
Big time. I think so.
If he wasn't starting, he would be the first off the bench instead of Gabe Osaboyan, and Darius Hall was so much better than Gabe. Mm-hmm. I think they're really missing him.
Thing is, you don't get Mason Jones without Darius Hall leaving, and I think I'd rather have Mason than Darius.
Yeah. Did he open up a scholarship or something when he left?
Yeah, I think Mason was a late add from junior college, and so when CJ Jones and Darius left, you know, that opened up a couple spots, and Mason got one, and he's been a big surprise.
Yeah,
he's been a big surprise. I think Mike Haywood, Arkansas's basketball SID, said that Mason's like second in the SEC in scoring per game, just under 20. So yeah. I mean, he's leading you in scoring right now. He had 18 against Tennessee. Some of those buckets were late. But I wrote about him last week. He's been their most consistently aggressive guard.
Yeah.
And that has to filter through the rest of the guys too. And Jalen's got to start taking better care of the ball. Like, there's so many things right now that's kind of plaguing them. But Mason's been a pretty pleasant surprise, I think.
Absolutely. And I want to thank Hog 2009 for that question about Adrio. He had another question. Do you have any thoughts on Sam Vecenie's tweet about Daniel Gafford?
Yeah, so
can you read that tweet for us real quick too?
Yeah, Sam, I'll preface it with Sam Vecenie is a college basketball analyst / NBA draft analyst for The Athletic, and Sam does some really good stuff, and he helped me with a story. I guess it was the last spring when Jalen Barford was entering the NBA draft, and he answered a question for me on Jalen just about his draft prospects and stuff. His tweet kind of goes back to what I've talked about in the past a little bit, which is how Arkansas uses Daniel Gafford as more of a back to the basket big than in pick and rolls. And Sam said, I'll just generally say it. It is relatively infuriating that Arkansas has maybe one of the three best rim runners in the country in Daniel Gafford and rarely uses him as a roller. So far this season, 84 finished possessions in post-up versus only 16 finished possessions as a roller. Hmm. So that gives you a snapshot. Like, they're using him as a back-to-the-basket guy essentially 85% of the time.
Hmm.
In those pick-and-roll situations, when I wrote about after the Texas A&M game, they had so much more success running him, like using him in ball screens, than they did when they just told him to, hey, go find your matchup, get position, we might throw you the ball.
Yeah.
If we like can that, get it in that, you. Yeah, that's the thing too. Like he could get position, doesn't mean the guys are gonna feed it to him.
Yeah.
And so that's frustrating. And like I get that. There's a lot of the people that I'm familiar with, like on Twitter, they're just kind of irritated with how he's used. And I think that was kind of an outside voice, just kind of lending another voice to a little bit of discontent with how he's being used, because that's not how he's going to be used in the pros. Like he's going to be used like a Clint Capela type with the Houston Rockets, pick and roll, floor spaced with shooters everywhere, and it's just you and the guard and plenty of space to work with in the paint. Just when your back's not to the basket, like just a rim runner.
Yeah,
like that's how he's. I feel like that's how he's going to be used, and he's not getting a whole lot of practice at it right now.
No, and like Mike said, though, there's still a lot of basketball to be played. Maybe Mike reads that tweet and he says, hey, what a great idea.
Right.
I didn't think about that.
Hey, read Scotty's story from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Could email it to him. Our colleague Tom Murphy from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, we mentioned him earlier, he also brought up a little interesting tidbit. The past two, Arkansas is currently 1-3 in the SEC. The past two seasons, they also started 1-3. About two seasons ago, they ended up as an 8 seed in the tournament, and last year they were a 7 seed after starting 1-3. He mentioned that to Mike, and Mike was kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, I kind of didn't realize that. Hadn't really thought about it. So,
just their annual
knows?
Thing.
Do I?
Just their annual thing.
Yeah. Yeah, they start running 1-3, and then they win, like, you know, 11 of the next 12 or whatever.
So they lost three of their first, and so this 2016-17 season, this was when they, this was when Arkansas eventually lost to North Carolina in the second round of the tournament. They lost to Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi State in the first 2 weeks and beat Tennessee, and then they won 4 straight. The next year they beat, or last year they beat Tennessee here, which was one of the wildest games I've ever been at.
Yeah.
And then they lost to Mississippi State, Auburn, LSU. Beat Missouri, lost to Florida, and then they won 3 straight. So, like, they can bounce back from it. The schedule's just not going to be – it's not kind.
No, and I think, you know, they're learning, you know, on the fly. But they're such a young team. They have so much to learn. It's like they learn maybe one new thing per game. It's hard for them to, like, put it all together in the same game, you know.
The thing I think will help Arkansas is that their road games are atrocious. Like, they have to go to Ole Miss, Texas Tech. So, that's not in conference, but have to go to LSU, to South Carolina, to Missouri, to Auburn, to Kentucky, and at Vanderbilt. Like,
ouch.
Vanderbilt's not – I mean, you're not totally – you're not scared to go. You're never like, oh, man, this is impossible to win there. Like, the court configuration is just weird.
It's wonky.
It's just weird.
Yeah.
And that kind of creates a home court advantage for Vanderbilt. But Arkansas's home games are – fairly winnable. Like, they have Missouri, Georgia, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State will be tough, but they get Texas A&M at home, Ole Miss at home, and Alabama at home. So your home schedule's kind of favorable. Like, you feel like you could win a majority of those games.
I think they'll win most of those. I wouldn't predict them to beat Mississippi State.
Yeah.
But as far as winning another road game this season,
I don't think so.
I don't see that happening. Maybe Vanderbilt.
It was fun having a 2-0 record on the road for a little while, wasn't it?
It was fun while it lasted. Well, speaking of road games, Arkansas is taking on the Ole Miss Rebels this Saturday in Oxford, noon on SEC Network. We will have live updates, coverage from Oxford on wholehogsports.com. We'll be back. Scotty and I will be back next week with the basketball podcast in Mid-America. By then, we will have played Ole Miss, and I think they'll have a home game against Missouri next Wednesday.
Yeah, next Wednesday.
So we'll talk about that. But until then, for Scotty Bordelon of Whole Hog Sports, this is Blake Sutton from Whole Hog Sports. Thanks for listening.